Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, the Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jeff Wolf is behind the console. Jane Houghton, our producer this morning. And the reports of the Omicron variant, the toll it is taking around the country and around the world in terms of infections and now cancellations and postponements. As an example, the Washington football team now moving tomorrow's game to Philadelphia. They will play the Eagles at 7 o'clock on Tuesday night. That's just one of the results of the spread of the COVID variant. Two other NFL games have been postponed. The variant is expected to become the dominant strain in the coming weeks. That according to the CDC director, Dr. Rochelle Walensky. She made that statement yesterday. The research is still early on the Omicron variant, but what they are saying is abundantly clear. It's poised to spread rapidly across the U.S. and will likely overwhelm U.S. hospitals and the healthcare system. In New York, the Rockettes have canceled their Christmas performance, which you know is a very famous institution in the city of New York. A number of Broadway shows are now canceling. Record-setting numbers of infections for the third day in a row in the United Kingdom. So that is the scenario as we look at the spread of the COVID variant and what it means impacting our holidays and what that will mean for family gatherings and travel and air travel. We will obviously keep you posted here at WMAL. Well, Build Back Better will not be built back in 2021. Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema have continued to resist the pressure of the Biden administration and the progressive Democrats. And as an example of how Joe Manchin has had to deal with this, I think you've seen him chased around Washington, chased around the Senate. You've seen protesters show up at his houseboat, yacht. Some call it a houseboat. Others would call it a yacht. But you've seen the pressure that's been on Joe Manchin. And earlier this week, he had just about enough of it as he was getting on an elevator at the U.S. Senate.
I'm not negotiating with you. Okay. So you can ask all the questions you want. You can go. Guys, let me go. This is bull. You're bull. Okay. I'm done.
He's done. He certainly is. And Build Back Better is done for this year. They'll try again next year. It'll be very interesting to see what the impact will be on the 2022 congressional races, especially if the progressive Democrats can't get that one through. What does that mean for their voting bloc and the support of the progressives and the Democratic candidates in 2022? Well, we'll talk to John Gizzi a little bit later on in the program, get a little more detail on Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, their feelings and what may happen in the new year. Very interesting statements, I guess you would say. There were speeches that Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden were giving on Tuesday. And I just wanted to highlight this because we all need a laugh this morning with the seriousness of the news. They were speaking to a group of Democratic Party members. And here's Nancy Pelosi praising President Biden.
Our country could not be better served than with this most experienced, capable hands than yours, President Biden. He's just perfect. The timing couldn't be better.
He's just perfect. She's about as far out of touch with things as he is. Well, speaking of him being out of touch with things, he's certainly very confident about the 2022 congressional races. Here's what the president had to say in the projections for 2022 in the midterms.
Now we look at 2022. I want to tell my Republican friends, get ready, pal. You're going in for a problem. Let me say this again for the president. We're going to win in 2022.
Okay. I'd like to take that bet with Joe. We continue. Now, what's going on? People are waking up. Many, many people are waking up to what's going on around the country. And especially if you've seen the images of these smash and grab crimes around the country, and the murder rates are up in the major cities. And as an example of people waking up, I mean, you know, average people have woken up, but even the progressives are waking up now. London Breed is the progressive mayor of San Francisco. She was one on board with defunding the police earlier on. Here's how Mayor London Breed, progressive Mayor London Breed of San Francisco, is looking at things this week.
The reign of criminals who are destroying our city, it is time for it to come to an end. And it comes to an end when we take the steps to be more aggressive with law enforcement and less tolerant of all the that has destroyed our city.
Well, it's about time. Let's hope some more people wake up between now and the midterms. Well, it is the Saturday Morning Update. We're glad that you have joined us. We'll be chatting with Jennifer Harper coming up shortly. She's got some really bad poll numbers for President Biden. They just continue to spiral downwards. We'll be talking with Jim Trusty. Two cases in Minnesota. Of course, Derek Chauvin and a plea that he made this week to federal charges. And Kim Potter, the officer who accidentally shot a suspect with her revolver when she meant to pull her taser. She was on the stand yesterday. We'll get the read from Jim Trusty on that coming up later on in this hour. John Gizzi will join us in the 7 o'clock hour, and we'll take a closer look at what's going on Capitol Hill and what's next, as well as Speaker Pelosi running for re-election again. And there's a little bit of intrigue that goes along with that, because there's a strategy at play possibly here, and we'll delve into that with John this morning. Cheryl Atkinson will join us a bit later on this morning, and we're going to talk with her about an interview she has coming up with one of the Blackwater defendants. He was convicted in the shooting deaths of Iraqi civilians, and she's uncovered some very interesting things in a conversation that she'll have with him tomorrow on her program. And then we'll talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. We're going to look at some of the vaccine mandates, the impact on the military. And KT McFarland will be coming up to join us later on this morning as well. And we will take a look at the Biden administration as the year comes to an end. So a lot to cover this morning on the Saturday Morning Update, as well as some holiday gift ideas we have for you next. And we're going to take a look at real estate in the Washington area. So stay with us here on the Saturday Morning Update. 6:16, time for a check of the traffic and weather. And Michelle Murray's at the WMAL Traffic Center.
Overall traffic is moving well on the Beltway this morning throughout Maryland and Virginia. There was a minor incident on the outer loop at Kenilworth Avenue. Looks like that is just on the left shoulder. It is not causing any delays. If you are traveling in Wheaton, be aware of some road work taking place westbound on University Boulevard between Arcola Avenue and Amherst Avenue along the two right lanes. Earlier accident on DC 295 northbound at Pennsylvania Avenue has been cleared and all lanes are now open. Do be aware of the Wreath Across America taking place today at the Arlington National Cemetery, which will affect multiple roads in the Arlington area, including Southgate Road, which will be closed between Columbia Pike and South Oak Street. Also, the ramp from the southbound GW Parkway to the Memorial Bridge will be blocked. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly cloudy on this Saturday. We'll see temperatures into the 50s the majority of the day. May see them actually jump into the upper 50s, though, later on tonight ahead of a cold front. We'll have the possibility for some late afternoon and evening showers, few and far between. I think a better chance of rain as we head overnight with the cold front itself. Breezy winds be likely throughout the day on Sunday, and falling temperatures. Warmest temperatures in the morning, dropping into the mid-40s, though, by the afternoon. Could see some lingering early morning precipitation, but clearing skies by Sunday afternoon as well. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
49 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:17, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for being with us. The holidays are upon us. That means holiday shopping. And if you want to get something really nice, you want to make sure you make the right decision and you get the right value. Who better than to speak to diamonds and jewelry than Ronnie Mervis? He is the CEO of Mervis Diamond Importers. Ronnie, great to have you with us here on WMAL this morning.
It's always my pleasure to be back. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. People are going to be making the decisions, and people who are married,
yes,
you're not going to be buying an engagement diamond, but may want to get a diamond for that special person in your life. What are the tips that you would offer, do's and don'ts, from a professional standpoint?
Well, you just said it. You may already be married, so you're not going to buy her an engagement ring, but you could tell her you'd marry her all over again. And there's another beautiful reason for a diamond. It could be a new diamond ring. It could be to exchange or to scale up the previous one. There are beautiful diamond wedding bands, which could be a nice add-on. There are anniversary bands. The diamond stud earrings, which is the biggest selling item as a fashion item during the holidays. Diamond necklaces, diamond bracelets, diamond, 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 diamond. As far as I'm concerned, there can never be enough of them. So there's no shortage of things, of beautiful diamond jewelry, which is available and which we have and we'd love to show your listeners.
I doubt we have poll numbers, but of the different possibilities you just mentioned, is there one that kind of stands out that you would say is among the favorites?
Yes, diamond stud earrings, especially at the holiday time. Diamond stud earrings, as I say in some of our commercials, you can wear them anytime. You can wear them with a formal gown. You can wear them with your blue jeans. You can wear them to go shopping. You go to the grocery store. You go out at night. Diamond stud earrings are the biggest thing, and women love them, and men love to buy them. And so we've got a happy medium. Everybody's very pleased. So diamond studs, and the bigger, the better.
So when you're thinking earrings, you may not be thinking as a purchaser being as critical as you are when you're looking at an engagement ring. And you have, I think, like the four C's of gradation and how you measure rings. But what about when you get into diamond earrings and other jewelry?
Well, I'm glad you asked me. Diamonds are graded by what's known as the four C's: cut, color, clarity, carat weight. For diamond jewelry and for diamond ear studs in particular, we think that clarity, which is the internal clarity or purity of the diamond, is way less important than the other features. We recommend for diamond stud earrings that they should be as large as possible for the amount of money that's available, the finest color that's available, the best cut so that they are sparkle and they really catch the light and throw the light back. But seeing they're worn as earrings, which is not as sentimental a purchase as a diamond engagement ring, and because nobody ever gets that close to anybody's ears and has a look anyhow, I think one can afford to let the clarity issue drop a little bit. It's not so important. And instead of making that a big deal, rather get it at a more acceptable budgetary point or get it as bigger and brighter. And so I think that clarity is not that important for earrings. I always joke about the Ronnie rules. I call them the three Ronnie rules for earrings. Firstly, nobody should get that close. Secondly, your eyes should be shut. And thirdly, the lights should be out. So why focus on all of that?
You know, one of those C's is the cut. And is the cut important on the diamond earring?
Cut is important on every diamond. When the diamond comes out of the ground, it's just like a pebble. It has no particular beauty at all. It's the cutting and the polishing which gives it the facets and the angles and the proportions which allows light to come in from the top, bounce around internally, and come back to the eye. If that diamond is cut and polished beautifully, it's a beautiful diamond. It's a joy to behold. If it's not, then it's nothing special. We specialize and we focus in a fine cut diamond so that it's just as absolutely brilliant and beautiful as it could be. And that's just as important to us for diamond stud earrings or for a pendant or anything else as it is for a ring. So yes, we are fanatic about the cut, and that is something we never let go. Cut is a big thing. But again, to just repeat something that I had said before, especially for earrings, you want them large enough that people can see them, and you want them in a nice color. And those three things, size, color, and sparkle, which is the cut, way more important than what's inside them. And that's what we recommend and push.
Ronnie, what do you see as trends in your industry these days?
Well, something which is emerging now is the new lab-grown diamonds. Instead of diamonds coming only from Mother Nature, which could take up to a billion years to make in nature, they're now being grown in laboratories, and they're coming in just as beautiful as a lab-grown diamond as they are in a natural mined diamond. But because it is much less expensive to produce them commercially than it is to go deep down underground, Our clients and clients everywhere can get a lab-grown diamond in a much bigger size for the same money that they would normally get a natural mined diamond. So the new trend that we are seeing is that more and more people are asking for lab-grown diamonds, requesting them, demanding them, and it is something we never saw in the past, but it is certainly something that we're seeing now. Another emerging trend is the shape of the diamond. Cut normally refers to the way it's actually cut, that light enters into the diamond and bounces around. Shape is a different thing. Shape refers to the actual overall look of it. It could be square or oval, or it could be a marquise, which is long pointy, or a pear shape, or round. And we're seeing that round, which is the old familiar, is still the most popular. But emerging fast are the new rectangular shapes, princesses, cushions, ashes, and ovals, which are becoming very popular. So we see trends changing in terms of the shape of the diamonds that people are asking for. That's very interesting. And we're seeing, especially after COVID, that people want bigger diamonds. I can't really explain it, but maybe because of COVID and the pandemic, people were locked up and did not spend their money and held off. And now with a big rush, everybody's coming back into the market. And the money that was saved over the year and a half of not spending is now being spent for bigger and better. And we are quite amazed at the big diamonds which are going out of the door, flying out of the door. And we wish everybody health and happiness and luck with the big, beautiful new diamonds.
I was looking around on your website, and there is a drop-down menu, and where it says diamonds on the drop-down, you actually show all of those different cuts.
Yes.
So we were just talking about, if anybody wants to see it, just go to mervisdiamond.com, and you'll see all the cuts.
And if you want an explanation of lab-growns, if you look at the footer, there is a title called Lab-Grown.
Ronnie Mervis, very helpful hints for holiday shopping this time of the year. We really appreciate it. Again, it's mervisdiamond.com, and we always remember 1-800-HER-LOVE.
Anytime you like. Thank you, Rick. I appreciate the invitation to be with you. And happy holidays, everybody, and happy shopping.
We're at 6:25 on the Saturday Morning Update here on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
6:28 Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. It's always fascinating to see the spin and misrepresentations that come out of the White House briefing room. And Jen Psaki, of course, dodging the bullets these days from a number of different reporters. And Peter Doocy's not the only one from Fox that's asking some tough questions. The other media outlets are asking some tough questions, and this probably, I have one from earlier in the week, but I think it says it all. And I don't think it's really a tough question. It's a question that at the end of the first year of a new administration, you might expect that somebody would ask you this question. And listen to Jen Psaki's response.
What does the administration consider your biggest achievement in foreign policy in this first year?
You know, this is a great question. I want to be thoughtful about it. I want to talk to the president about it, and I'm happy to do that.
That translates into English as, we have no great accomplishments in foreign policy, or maybe just we have no accomplishments in foreign policy. A couple other stories that I thought were interesting this week that you may very well have missed if you get your news from traditional sources and not necessarily places like WMAL or Fox News or Newsmax. As an example, Andrew Cuomo, the governor formerly of New York, has been ordered to return millions in book proceeds. That's right. The memoir that he published while governor of New York, well, the money is supposed to come back. That's according to a state ethics panel vote in the state of New York. Members of the Joint Commission on Public Ethics voting 12-1 for a resolution giving Cuomo 30 days to turn the money over to the New York State Attorney General's office. The earnings from the book expected to be about $5.1 million. An attorney for Andrew Cuomo said Cuomo will challenge Tuesday's decision. Why does that not surprise me? It's 6:30 on WMAL. We'll check the news next. Then we're back with Jennifer Harper. Very interesting poll numbers and also a look at what Donald Trump's media empire will look like. That's all coming up. Stay with us.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
In the news this morning, a federal appeals court panel has ruled that President Biden's vaccine mandate for larger private employers can take effect. It was a 2-1 ruling on Friday from a panel of judges on the U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. It reverses a lower court ruling that had paused that requirement. Republican-led states and conservative groups are challenging the rule, which would apply to companies with at least 100 employees, and it would affect some 84 million workers across the U.S. They have vowed to appeal that ruling. The suburban Minneapolis police officer who shot and killed motorist Dante Wright said she's sorry it happened. She took the stand yesterday, the defense resting the case in her trial. She's charged with manslaughter in Wright's death. That was during an April 11th traffic stop in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, outside of Minneapolis. She said she meant to use her taser to subdue Wright when he pulled away from the officers, got back into his car as they tried to arrest him, and he tried to drive away. She shot him with her handgun instead of her taser. It's 6:33, time for a check of the traffic and weather, and Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
So far, it looks like traffic is continuing to move well on the Beltway throughout Maryland and Virginia. All earlier road work in Virginia on the Beltway near 66 has been cleared away, and so far traffic is moving well on 66 from Centerville to the Beltway. In Maryland and Wheaton, there is construction westbound on University Boulevard between Arcola Avenue and Amherst Avenue in the two right lanes, so allow a little bit of extra travel time in that area. Also, watch out for some emergency utility work in the district on Florida Avenue at 14th Street in Northwest. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
Mostly cloudy on this Saturday. We'll see temperatures into the 50s the majority of the day. May see them actually jump into the upper 50s, though, later on tonight ahead of a cold front. We'll have the possibility for some late afternoon and evening showers, few and far between. I think a better chance of rain as we head overnight with the cold front itself. Breezy winds be likely throughout the day on Sunday and falling temperatures. Warmest temperatures in the morning, dropping into the mid-40s, though, by the afternoon. Could see some lingering early morning precipitation, but clearing skies by Sunday afternoon as well. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Look at the StormWatch 7 Weather Center.
49 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:34, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, 105.9 FM, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It's the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jennifer Harper joins us. She writes inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Rick.
Time magazine just had its person of the year recently. It was Elon Musk, and I'm surprised it wasn't Joe Manchin.
Yeah, well, he would have been a really good candidate because this is a senator who is, his public profile is just growing by leaps and bounds, particularly this week now. He is Senator Joe Manchin, West Virginia Democrat, and he is one of these few folks that is considered a powerhouse centrist. That is what he is called on occasion, a bipartisan kind of guy. And certainly he pushed back on President Biden's $2 trillion spending bill this week, along with a bunch of other things. And the press coverage of Senator Joe Manchin is now calling him an insurgent, a maverick. Now, those were words that were used, as we recall, in past years to describe the late Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona. And you got to remember, Senator Manchin, he also fits a kind of a he-man politician profile, if you can deal with that. He's about 6'3", and his biography describes him as an avid pilot, outdoorsman, hunter, angler, and motorcyclist. So that's who you're dealing with. But the most important headline that came out this week was from the Washington Post, and the Washington Post said, Joe Manchin, the Democrats' other president, had an eventful 2021.
Ooh.
In 2021, Senator Joe Manchin was practically an administration unto himself. And they also said for the Democratic agenda, all roads go through West Virginia. So he's kind of emerging as an interesting player, somebody to watch in 2024. And also Fox Business weighed in on that. They said Biden's mega spending bill could be in jeopardy as Manchin stands his ground. Manchin opposes the bill's cost and is reportedly concerned about the expanded child tax credit. And the operative term here, Rick, is stands his ground. That's kind of an old school political quality that could appeal to voters on both sides. So it's certainly is something to watch. And reporters have repeatedly asked Mr. Manchin if he was going to desert the Democratic Party. And his reply was, I don't intend to leave, but I intend to be honest. That was a pretty clever thing. And Senator Kyrsten Sinema made the headlines this week for also opposing a lot of issues that are very dear to the Democratic leadership. And the Deseret News said that she was on their list of 2022 change makers, and they praised her political plasticity. So that's a bunch of words you can think of when it comes to politics. But Manchin definitely emerges would-be president in 2024. Who knows?
Well, Senators Manchin and Sinema have not done much to help President Biden's poll numbers. They continue to disintegrate, but the media has interesting ways of describing it.
Yes, they do, because they're always going down. And it's almost as if the media has run out of adjectives and verbs to describe President Biden's lousy approval ratings. And this is just like one day this week, I kind of chartered what the press was saying about these crummy polls of his. And here we go. According to Fox News, Biden's approval rating on crime tanks. Then we could move over to the New York Post. They said Biden's approval rating on the economy, COVID response, both plummet. And then we move on to ABC News. They said President Biden's job approval sinking on inflation, crime, and COVID. Then let's go on to CNBC. Public view on Biden's handling of COVID and the economy takes another hit. Biden's approval rating on inflation sinks to 28%. And one more, Salt Lake City Tribune. They said the President Joe Biden's approval rating plummets in Utah. And they're kind of running out of descriptions here, so I decided I would go to Merriam-Webster Dictionary and find a couple of more words, some kind of handy synonyms for plummet and sink and all that other stuff. Here's what the dictionary advises, if you're sick of those words. For President Biden's poll numbers, they could crash, crater, decline, descend, dip, dive, drop, fall, lower, nosedive, I like that one, plunge, sink, skid, and tumble.
So what words would you use to describe his poll numbers in New Hampshire?
New Hampshire has soured on Biden. How about that, Rick? And, you know, we pay attention to what goes on in New Hampshire because they're kind of the common sense state, the first in the nation, all eyes on them during big elections and so forth. But President Biden's job approval is just kind of going really lousy up there in New Hampshire. There's actually a New Hampshire Journal poll that was released this week that reveals, and this is their word, jaw-dropping. A jaw-dropping 70% of New Hampshire registered voters believe that the country is on the wrong track. 57% have an unfavorable review of President Biden. 52% oppose his Build Back Better trillion-kabillion-dollar spending plan. And according to the poll analysis here, they said one of Biden's biggest problems may be the perceived gap between Biden the candidate and Biden the president. I thought that was pretty smart because that's very true. The media and everyone else tries to build him up, but in reality, this poll is revealing that even the folks up in New Hampshire are seeing now what's going on. And when asked whether the Biden presidency was going better than expected, worse than expected, or if he was governing as they expected to, only 14% said that Biden's job performance was better than expected. Again, this is coming out of New Hampshire. And also, the New Hampshire Journal, if you're curious about the politics, all-important politics up there in the Granite State, it's an interesting read. So that was a poll of 729 registered New Hampshire voters conducted December 9 through 10.
Former President Trump continues to make the headlines day in and day out. Pretty big deal media company he's got coming down the pike and a very interesting CEO to head it up.
Yeah, this is really interesting. Sometimes you think that former president has got, you know, too many he used to have too many tweets, but now he puts out a lot of press releases and statements and so forth, sometimes four or five a day. I get them all. That's why, you know, they're always interesting. But in the meantime, he has kind of quietly revved up this new media empire. He's at work. If you haven't heard about this, he has a new public outreach, which is about to go live, called Truth Social. And he is describing this as America's big tent social media platform. that encourages an open, free, and honest global conversation without discriminating against political ideology. Again, this is called Truth Social, but it just got some muscles this week because the Trump Media and Technology Group, do you know that he's got that? Well, he does. They have signed up for a wide-ranging technology and cloud service agreement with a group called Rumble Incorporated. This is a video news platform. They have 44 million monthly users. They are definitely players in this business. And Mr. Trump made a statement. He said, as part of our mission, his technology group continues to align with service providers who do not discriminate against political ideology. Therefore, I have selected the Rumble Cloud to serve as a critical background for our infrastructure. And he's already launched Truth Social on the Rumble Cloud for invited guests only, and soon they're going to launch that for everyone else. And he says America is ready for Truth Social and the end to cancel culture. And the Rumble company itself say Rumble was built on the belief that all creators should have the opportunity to freely express themselves and reach their followers without censorship or restrictions. So if you're curious about True Social, very easy to find. They are kind of up and running. Won't be really active for a while, but it's truthsocial.com.
We all remember the impact that COVID-19 had on families and Christmas celebrations last year. What's it looking like this year?
Yeah, we've got so many mixed messages. Gosh, I actually dared to go out Christmas shopping, and the radio was just blaring, and the TVs were blaring about COVID this and Omicron that, and everybody's going, wait, am I in danger or not? But if you want some perspective, here's a pretty interesting poll. This is coming from Axios, and it was conducted December 10th through 13th, very, very current. They asked people, what the heck are you going to be doing over Christmas? And this might be reassuring to some. The poll found that 72% of Americans plan to see family and friends outside of their own household during the Christmas and holiday season. 47% say family visits pose a small risk to health and well-being. 30% say it's a moderate risk. 15% say these visits pose no risk. And only 6% consider them to be a large risk. And 52% say that returning to their pre-COVID life right now could be a moderate risk. And another 31% do not expect to return to their pre-COVID life for more than a year. So interesting perspective there, but kind of reassuring if you're going to get together with all the cool and good, nice folks in your life. So, again, that's an Axios poll, Rick.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Enjoy this final week till Christmas.
That's right. Merry Christmas, everybody.
And to you, too. 6:45 Saturday morning update. Three high-profile trials and legal cases in the news this week, and we're going to talk to Jim Trusty about that next. But first, Michelle Murray is in the WML Traffic Center this morning.
Reports of an accident down the BW Parkway southbound after 198. Watch out for delays there. And on the outer loop of the Beltway near Kenworth Avenue, there is an accident in the left lane, so watch out for that. Also in Wheaton, watch out for some construction westbound on University Boulevard between Arcola Avenue and Amherst Avenue, and that is affecting the two right lanes. And in the district, watch out for lane closures on Florida Avenue in both directions at 14th Street due to emergency utility work. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly cloudy on this Saturday. We'll see temperatures into the 50s the majority of the day. May see them actually jump into the upper 50s, though, later on tonight ahead of a cold front. We'll have the possibility for some late afternoon and evening showers, few and far between. I think a better chance of rain as we head overnight with the cold front itself. Breezy winds be likely throughout the day on Sunday, and falling temperatures. Warmest temperatures in the morning, dropping into the mid-40s, though, by the afternoon. Could see some lingering early morning precipitation, but clearing skies by Sunday afternoon as well. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's 49 degrees in the nation's capital. We're at 6:46. It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
The Saturday morning update continues on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We're joined by Jim Trusty. He is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, and he is the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
All eyes on two cases in Minnesota this week. Kim Potter, is the police officer in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, right outside of Minneapolis. She mistook her handgun for her taser when she shot and killed 20-year-old Dante Wright during a traffic stop. She's 49. She's had 26 years of experience as a police officer. She and other officers, including a trainee, were attempting to arrest Wright when he tried to get back into his vehicle. She faces up to 15 years in prison if convicted of the most serious count of manslaughter. Jim, what's the status of that case at the end of the week?
Well, it's about to go to the jury. On Monday, there'll be jury instructions from the judge about the law, and then closing arguments will be Monday, maybe into Tuesday, and then the jury will have the case.
Officer Potter took the stand in her own defense on Friday, broke down in very emotional testimony. And Jim, as a prosecutor, and you've been in the courtroom, do you think the jurors will find that sincere and it will have a major impact on them?
Well, that's a great question, because really everybody can have an opinion whether they've been in court a lot or not. I will tell you, I took it as a very authentic moment in terms of her testimony. She got extremely upset when she was recounting this tragic mistake. And I think that it was a little bit aggravated by the prosecutor's cross-examination coming off just a little too, I suppose, harsh. I know that sounds strange. You think prosecutors are going to be very aggressive. But she was a little, I think, tone deaf to a person on the stand who was clearly legitimately breaking down. And, of course, this is consistent with what happened at the scene. A lot of people don't realize from the videotapes they've seen that when Kim Potter discharged her firearm instead of the taser, she was almost instantly in the grip of powerful remorse. She was very upset. She said she shot him, said that a number of times hysterically to her partners. She even said, "I grabbed the wrong effing gun," meaning that she had grabbed the firearm out of her belt rather than the taser. And within moments, she was talking about killing herself. I mean, it was a dramatic, traumatic moment for her, whether it was criminal or not. And I think her testimony on the stand was not particularly inconsistent with that kind of devastation, that kind of reaction that she had taken the life of another person by mistake.
Tell us about the incident and why this could be a very difficult case for the jury.
Well, you know, the jury gets a little bit of a cleaned up view of the other end of the equation. In other words, they probably didn't hear a whole lot about Dante Wright's criminal history. But I will say this, the event itself involved a clearly lawful arrest. In other words, the police weren't doing something that was immediately out of bounds. He had a outstanding bench warrant for his arrest. And you see from the videotape that he was essentially in the process of being pretty calmly handcuffed for that warrant when he decides to jump into the car and start trying to move the vehicle. And in fact, after he was shot, he did move the vehicle before essentially collapsing. So, yeah, that's a dangerous situation for police. I'm a little bit of a homer from my 27 years of prosecution when it comes to respecting how difficult the job is for law enforcement. But in that circumstance, you know, Kim Potter's partner could have easily been dragged to either great harm or to death by this guy who was intent on driving away. Now, as she fired, she basically tried to clear that very limited, chaotic scene on a safety level by yelling taser. She said that several times. And when she fired her gun, again, thinking that she had drawn her taser, you see this almost immediate remorse, this immediate kind of fog of war moment where she's realized that she pulled out the wrong device. And, you know, the prosecutor went after her long and hard about how she'd been well-trained, how she knows where these things are on the belt. But I think this is one of these cases where the line of negligence versus gross negligence is going to be a very important distinction for a jury considering these manslaughter charges.
So she's a 26-year veteran, the government introducing use of force experts. And tell us a little bit about your experience with law enforcement officers. She's 26 years on the force. What about her record on the force?
Yeah, I have not heard anything to suggest that she had any sort of a bad record. She certainly, by her own account on the witness stand, had never fired her gun, you know, in the midst of an arrest or in the midst of any sort of event like that. And so my own experience has been that the officers that end up being problem officers tend to have a pretty immediate and then a pretty sustained history of complaints or of questionable conduct. I can think back to one that I was familiar with in Montgomery County, Maryland, a long time ago. And there were moments where even if it was a clean shoot, in other words, that he was justified in firing his service revolver, none of the other officers at the scene did. So you always had this kind of nagging thought that why does he keep finding himself in these very dangerous situations where he's discharging the gun and nobody else is? And that ended up with actually a pretty high-profile trial for manslaughter. So you know, I tend to think that just like Officer Chauvin up in Minnesota, you start to hear things about their history that become, at least in retrospect, real red flags. We don't have any of that with Kim Potter.
One last question. The defense resting its case. As you see the charges, where does this play out in terms of would there be a lesser charge that she could be convicted on, or is it manslaughter or nothing?
It looks to me like it's going to be manslaughter or nothing. I suppose we'll know 100% when the final jury instructions are given on Monday. But I didn't hear anything from the early portions of the charging conference where the parties talk about how the judge is going to instruct the jury that suggested there was anything else on the table.
You mentioned Derek Chauvin, of course, the former Minneapolis police officer who was charged and convicted in the death of George Floyd. He pleaded guilty on Wednesday to a federal charge. What's that about?
Yeah, it's about federal overreach, basically. I mean, federal civil rights prosecutions are typically justified. In other words, they only supplant state prosecutions when there is what they call an unvindicated federal interest. And that usually means there was some sort of manifest injustice in the state proceeding or no charges at all. You don't normally see, or you didn't historically see, a complete doubling up of the federal charges. And so you think back historically, Rick, we had the LAPD officers that were tried for Rodney King's death. Well, they were acquitted in state court. The federal government said, we think this is a manifest injustice. And so civil rights prosecutors from DOJ went after the officers for the same conduct and were able to get convictions. Here in Minnesota, the DOJ announced the charges against all four of these Minneapolis officers while the state case was still pending. So there was clearly no issue about a failed justice system at the time these charges were placed. And I remember thinking at that time, this feels like a DOJ that's chasing headlines. And in fact, there was really no justification other than this was a really bad event, and we're going to do everything we can as the Department of Justice to go after these guys. Well, Chauvin has now quietly pled guilty to the federal case in an agreement that guarantees concurrent time. Now, that might extend his sentence a little bit. It might be that he paroles out of his 22-and-a-half-year state sentence after 15, 16, 17 years. He might have a little tour at the back end of a federal prison. But by definition, we're talking about really tinkering. And the fact that DOJ civil rights are filing these charges kind of preemptively and then saying, let's do a concurrent plea, shows there was never any sort of unvindicated federal interest. This is an attorney general who has completely lost the concept of federalism. It's just big DOJ weighing in heavily when there's some sort of liberal cause that they support. And we've seen that with taking over local police departments, with doubling up like this on police shootings, and shutting down protesting parents at school board meetings. I mean, there is federalism is hanging by a thread at best when it comes to the Attorney General and DOJ of the Biden administration.
And the trial of Ghislaine Maxwell, the associate of Jeffrey Epstein, continuing this week. What's the latest in terms of developments there?
Well, we're almost at the finish line. You know, the defense had said they needed 4 days to present their case. They took about a day, maybe a half a day. Ms. Maxwell made a point of telling the judge when she wasn't going to testify that she wasn't testifying because the government had not proven its case. That's kind of a feel-good moment. Sometimes the defense attorneys try to pull that off in front of a jury. It's really actually borderline whether they've waived their Fifth Amendment privilege by having that little preamble to it. But in any event, it kind of fell on deaf ears. The court said, duly noted, thanks for not testifying. Let's go to the charging conference. And so we'll have jury instructions and closing argument on that case on Monday as well.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law. As always, Jim, thank you so much for the perspectives. And you can follow Jim on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer.
Sure thing. Thanks. Have a good weekend.
And you too. We've got Maria Leaf coming up with the 7 o'clock news. Then we're back with John Gizzi, Cheryl Atkison. We'll take a look at the Washington real estate market with Sarah Reynolds. Tony Schaefer's on the way, and KT McFarland.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL, a Cumulus Media station.